how we speak of our life affects how we perceive our life. How we perceive our life changes how we speak of our life. The language that we use, the ways that we react. Yesterday, I briefly used an example of children at a play, during the play and during so-called intermission or after the play. Today, I want to talk a bit more and clarify, explore a little bit more the whole nature of how our perception, language is involved in what we do that results in our life, results in suffering, results in and affects how we practice. In general, we all, well, I shouldn't say we all, many of us are aware that if you were to say something about Buddha Dharma, certainly about Zen, you would say something about that our life is interdependent, interbeing, that our practice is being this oneness of life, this non-dualistic, that is our life. Nevertheless, though we can say those things, we very much privilege dualistic self and other ways of functioning almost automatically, not because we think about it, but because we take for granted that it is the way it is. It's in our bones, in our hearing, seeing, smelling. So, to go to what Linji said yesterday that we talk about, despite the fact that this mind dharma, no form, pervades in all directions, despite it being seeing in the eye and hearing in the ear and so forth, we pour onto it this self and other dream in many ways. And of course, different cultures, different languages emphasize different aspects of it. But it is something that is common in most human functioning, in most human languages, cultures. So, from Tang Dynasty in the 9th century, I will today enlist Dogen in Japan in the 13th century, and then a little more depending upon how we go. So Dogen says in the text Bendoa, which is one of his early texts, which is often translated as the oneness of practice and attesting. Practice and, let's say, awakening. Dogen says, because within the Dharma Dhatu, the Dharma realm of all 10 directions, earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, and pebbles, all engage in Buddha activities. Those who receive the benefit of wind and water caused by them are excellently and inconceivably helped by the Buddha's guidance, splendid and unthinkable, and awaken intimately to themselves. He further says, grass, trees, and lands which are embraced by this teaching together radiate a great light and endlessly expound the profound and excellent Dharma. Grass, trees, and walls bring forth the teaching for all being, common people as well as sages, and in accord extend this Dharma. They, meaning the people, common people and sages, extend this Dharma for the sake of grass, trees, and walls. Thus, the realm of self-awakening and awakening others originally holds the mark of attesting with nothing lacking. So, grass, trees, lands, walls, are they part of your practice? Are they separate? Do you see them as separate from yourself? If so, you've already missed Dogen's point. Or if so, you don't embrace this teaching that they radiate, this light that is endlessly expounding this Dharma that is your life. Our language and our tendencies of perception color and limit the seeing in the eye and the hearing in the ear. So ear, so that we think there's me hearing these other things outside there, and my practice is me. Just like he in the play, if during intermission the players continue to insist on who and what their roles are. What does Dogen mean when he says, forgetting self is to be attested, awakened, by the myriad dharmas? See, it's the walls, sound, cars, wind. That's the myriad dharmas. Attested by the myriad dharmas is casting off one's own body mind and body mind of others. Casting off this dream of own body mind and body mind of others. See? All traces of awakening are put to rest, and this traceless awakening is continued on and on endlessly. See? So just as we can hold on to a role after the play and create all sorts of suffering, we can hold on to self and other dualism, certainly animate and inanimate dualism, not only hold on to it, but every time we speak, believe the language. Nothing wrong with the language. In fact, all Dogen does, and all the ancestors for the past few days that I've brought up, are using language to clarify this reality. Nevertheless, when one carries self forward and attests the myriad dharmas, floor, wall, sound, seeing, smelling, through one's self, through one's, if I say it in language we use, one's self-centeredness, one's perceptions and believing words, this is delusion. It's not lacking, yet it's delusion. When the myriad dharmas advance forward and attest the self, this is awakening. When the walls, floor, car, myriad dharmas attest the self, this is awakening. Dogen is bringing this up not to just announce some principle, but to clarify this fundamental point. Just like yesterday when we quoted Wang Po and Lin Ji. So, Dogen is about 400 years actually after Wang Po and Lin Ji. He died 1253 and they died 850 something and 860 something. Common era. So he's not saying this just to say something fancy, but it's a fundamental point. See? Fundamentally, the truth which is the source of the way is perfectly encompassing. Doesn't mean perfectly encompassing my body and me, my life, but perfectly encompassing the grass, trees, lands, walls, which is my body, my life. I bring this up because of pointing out how we perceive through our language and therefore believe the language of dualism, separation, the language of self-centeredness. Not that there's anything wrong with that language as a utilitarian vehicle, but what we need to practice in, that's why when I say being as is the Dharma Dhatu in all the 10 directions, which it doesn't require us to be something different, because we are always this. See? See? Because the 10 directions of earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, humans, cars, television, internet, and so forth, all engage in Buddha activity. All are nothing but Buddha activity. See? This mind heart is Dharma. Dharma is this mind heart. No other Dharma outside this mind. no mind outside this Dharma. To quote Wang Po. Therefore, because this is so, your zazen, the zazen of even one person for one moment, imperceptibly accords with all beings, and fully all beings, all things, imperceptibly accords with all earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, ocean, cars, airplanes, corn growing in the fields, gas being pumped, imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time. All time means not only is it 10 directions of so-called physical, but it's past, present, future of limitless universe. And Dogen encourages us further, each moment of zazen is equally wholeness of practice, equally wholeness of attesting. See? But we don't have to go in that direction. It's enough to go in the direction of interbeing without having to then know that, of course, it's interbeing throughout so-called past, present. How could it be limited to this moment, says Dogen? See, I bring this up so that we can, if I say, let boundaries that we might hold on to even unnoticed be transparent, be seen for what they are, as simply artifacts, artifices that we bring up and use, but is never so. So your zazen doesn't include, if your zazen doesn't include anything, then right there, it's important to notice that. If your zazen, you think, is just about you inside this bag of skin and bones, notice that daydream that we seem to naturally believe, because that's how we speak of ourselves, therefore that's how we think of ourselves, and therefore that's how we think of others. No problem. If my hip aches, I need to attend to this ache and not say, oh, you take care of my ache. No. And yet this ache is just this ache that includes the car passing outside right this moment, includes the branches waving in the wind waving the branches. We don't have to know all these realms. We don't have to figure out this. But rather, I bring it up not to spawn us thinking about it and developing theories or anything like that, but rather as further opportunity to notice where and how, in holding to words and thoughts and perceptions, we limit our life, our functioning, and therefore, as Wang Po says, laboriously create suffering and troubles of all sorts. Oh, I talked too much. But I will stop now and maybe we can clarify this a bit more. I was going to, well, maybe I'll just at the end bring it up. I had mentioned I was going to bring up something further, but from some nuns. They're a little later than Dogen, but I might have to leave them for tomorrow, or maybe at the end of today, since I'll stop now, and maybe we can explore this together. If you need to change your position, please do.
I had this question yesterday, but I didn't ask it.
Oh, good. So it's even better.
So the quote that you read from yesterday by, I don't remember if it was Lin Po or Lin Chi, about that it's present in when the eye sees, it's present when the eye sees.
Yeah. In Lin Chi, it might be the mind arm is without form and pervades the 10 directions. In the eye, it is called seeing. In the ear, it is called hearing. In the nose, it smells odors, and so on.
So, maybe the first thing I thought of, as you talked about that more yesterday, was that the way our seeing functions is distinguishment. We see these characteristics. You know, the table's there, I'm here, you're there.
We see that, or we...
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what I think I see.
Yes.
And I found myself thinking, okay, well, so how would a Buddha or a Bodhisattva, would their actual sight be different from mine? Or is it that they're not fooled by...
Listen to what Wang Po said earlier. Remember, fundamental mind does neither belong to the seeing, hearing, and perceiving, nor is it separate from them. Just do not bring forth opinions on the basis of seeing, hearing, perceiving. Do not apply thought on the basis of seeing, hearing. See, we assume that me, the seeing, and what I see are three different things. Now, we could assume that, and that's fine. But even on the basis of science, there isn't that kind of separation, except if we make it up. If we say, yes, this ends here. Yes, I end here. Yet somehow I manage to see. So then we have this story about the waves that come and hit my eye and the retina and the nerve endings that somehow do something with my brain, and my brain then interprets the waves and turns them into seeing, and then it turns it into the table. However, all of that is fine as a provisional means, but it assumes that those are separate things, that there's this me somewhere inside here. That's the fundamental story of our language and human perception tendencies. That's what the Buddha's teaching, that's what all of these are pointing out, generates suffering and harm. Or what did being attached to characteristics, doing evil, goes through repeated cycles of samsara, even being attached to characteristics and doing good. One vainly meaning without, there's no need to do it. Nevertheless, we vainly undergo laboriously suffering, because we believe the self-centeredness. Because inherently, as long as we hold on to the self-centeredness, there will be this unsatisfactoriness of the conditions, unsatisfactory of the conditions of gain and loss, birth and death, because we see ourself and the universe separate. See, I don't say you have to believe this, just be willing to not know the assumptions that you hold on to. That's why I started by saying, just be willing to let the assumptions of language and the perceptions that grow out of it be transparent. Don't hold on to them. And in a way, not because I tell you to, but if we are as is by in sitting, in practicing, in sesshin, we begin to sense, let me say it this way, the permeability of our assumptions. Maybe, maybe not. I don't want to go into the quote science of it in all sorts of ways, because it's not only humans that do this, all sorts of beings do it. It's what leads to all sorts of harm and suffering when we hold on to those assumptions, beliefs, that way of functioning. That's why we talk about caught in self-centered dream. But you don't have to believe it. See, our practice is one of practicality, meaning you do and then you discover for yourself. That's why we use words like attesting to translate, or testify to the truth that self-nature is no nature. See, testify to it through our own functioning, through our own perception. That's why Dogen could say, be awakened by the 10,000 things, be attested to by the myriad dharmas, depending upon how you translate his Japanese or how you translate Wang Po and Lin Ji's Chinese. And of course, our language has this difficulty. And of course, their language has this difficulty. Each language has it in its own slightly different way. They weren't writing just for people who speak English, and people who speak Chinese or Japanese didn't have this problem. Or Sanskrit, or Pali, or whatever language. See, this is our human tendency. When we talk about the five skandhas, we're talking about the whole universe. It's not just so-called inside us. Nevertheless, it's seeing, it's perceiving. All of those are the functioning of ourself and the universe all together. But if we cling to them and get caught up in them, we get trouble. Again, I don't say it that anyone needs to believe it. Simply test it for yourself. We can see how even sitting still and upright, no one disturbing you in here, being caught up in perceptions and emotion thought can rile us up in all sorts of ways. Maybe those of you who've never experienced that, wonderful. However, many of us can see that. That's what they're trying to point out to us. And that's what yesterday, when I used that analogy of a play, This is another way to allow us to see, to clarify, so that we can notice what we do. Don't have to make it a broad new theory or generality, but simply notice when an aspect of this comes up in our functioning, in our relating, whether it's to the floor or to another person, whether it's relating to our daydreams or to someone speaking to us. Does that make sense?
So the practice point is the noticing opinions based on, or whatever, I don't know how you said it, maybe you said don't create opinions based on those perceptions.
The practice point is to be present, and in the midst of that, to being as is. The practice point is then in this experiencing, in this open experiencing, if I use that kind of word, to notice where we get caught up in, hold on to, believe this or that story, if I make it in simple terms. And what I'm pointing out today is how much the story builds on a dualistic tendencies in perception and in language that we take for granted. It sort of goes by, it's the background that we all assume is the ocean that we swim in. And we assume that we and the ocean are two. Or even something else. Sometimes we even assume we and our own life are two. Okay, one, two.
But what I'm hearing is that not only are we caught in a self-centered dream, we're also caught in our heads and in our bodies. And there's, I'm hearing more, I mean, that we are, I mean, if you do away with the head and the body and see yourself one with everything,
like hamburger essence. Well, you don't do away with anything. As I said, if my hip hurts, I have to put ice on my hip. If my leg is injured, I have to be careful whether I sit cross-legged or in a chair.
But I've sort of found that the practice is that I can get away from the hurt.
The point isn't necessarily to try to get away from the hurt.
No,
when it hurts, ow! Hurts!
Yeah, but I mean, if I'm sitting...
Despite the hurt, you don't have to run right away to reacting to it.
Right, it disappears.
Yes. Yes. Or, I won't say it disappears, but it appears in this bigger container than just the hurt and my, it's not fair that I'm hurting, why am I hurting, no one else is hurting, etc., etc.
Yeah, but like I stopped thinking about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Then it's just hurts.
Not there.
Yeah. Or it's there and it's not a big deal. Just like the fan whirring is there and it's not a big deal. Or maybe there's something that needs to be done because the hurt is saying that your leg's going to break unless you move it, and you're the one who has to make. See, each of us is the functioning of this moment of the whole universe. Therefore, we can do what's called for skillfully and appropriately if we're not caught up in various forms, in various stories. Then we can see the form and emptiness interpenetrating of this moment. We could see the whole universe of the walls, the flaws and the whirring fan all together in this moment, and then take care of what's needed. It's not either or. It's not, if I say it, it's not being caught up by the knowing about that our dualistic holding stories perpetuates. That's complicated. I should have said it more simply. It's not being caught up, or at least noticing when we're caught up and when that's hindering this experiencing, or noticing that so that we can be this experience. But even if we say oneness, in a way that's not so good, better to say not to. But even saying that, that can become just another phrase, an idea. It's living this so that we can pick up the rocks and build the wall that we're building next to the tree, despite the fact that this Dharma realm penetrates and is penetrated by these rocks, trees, and so forth. Okay? Joyce?
Well, I don't know, this may actually prove your point, but I want to go back to something you said, and
okay.
I don't remember when. It was something about we vainly do this.
I was quoting actually from yesterday, Obaku Wang Po, who is 9th century China, had a phrase. Let me see if I could find it so I can tell you what you were. He says, being attached to characteristics and doing good, one vainly undergoes laborious suffering. Being attached to characteristics, doing evil, one vainly goes through repeated cycles of samsara. He's just pointing out even attachment to good, so-called good and evil, create difficulties, because it's the attachment to characteristics that creates problems in our life and the life of others.
Yeah, I think you said just then, and so now here you may know something about the original word in the original language that I don't see, but when you said vainly, as in doing it in vain, like in other words, you can't do it, I also think it means
what?
Doing it vainly, as in egocentrically.
Here, the word that's being translated means that one need not go through this suffering except because one is attached to characteristics.
So I just think that vainly
in vain
is working. I think vain in vain though is working, you know, in both meanings.
Sure, you want to go to the word vanity for that vain. That's fine. Play with words is always enjoyable. Yes. And certainly if we're doing good, we can easily turn that vainly good into vanity of good. But the point is the attachment to characteristics. It's not the doing good. Do good. But the attachment to characteristics. By that he means attachment to things being a certain way or not being a certain way. It's what we do when we believe the stories about the characteristics, when we believe the stories about ourself and our position, when we believe the story that I'm the king and he's the servant, and when I tell him to do something, he should obey me, or whatever other story we believe. Or, why do these winds keep messing up what I set up outside for this picnic? And Dogen is pointing this out because of how hard it is for us. How hard it is for us to, in our holding on to self. See? Hard meaning, despite the fact that from the beginning we are so, we are this. From the beginning, there's nothing lacking. And he'll say that too. Fundamentally speaking, says Dogen, the truth which is the source of the way is perfectly encompassing, meaning encompasses all of us perfectly and all others. How could it be contingent on practice and attesting? The vehicle of the ancestors is itself already here. Why do we need to expand effort? And then he goes on to talk about this. This is in what's called Fukan Zazengi, Universal Promotion of the Principles of Zazen, one translation of that. Mouthful. Yes, David.
I really like the part where it's not creating separation between trees, ocean. Did you say moss?
Did I say moss?
I'm not sure. I couldn't.
No, I was, since I was quoting Dogen, I used the words that he used. So he said, on one place he said, earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, and pebbles. Another place he says, grass, trees, lands. Different places he puts together different combinations. It, take those as a shorthand. You want to substitute one for the other? You're free.
I just think it's very pleasant. You know, but then there's all these unpleasant things. You know, there's a sewage treatment plant.
Oh, you think that's excluded?
Or, a pile of old car tires or something. Uh-huh. There's a lot of things. So I think we think, what about these? Should we, maybe we inherently, we don't want those things. We like the trees.
Or this exploding volcano that's going to wipe out many beings of all sorts. Shame that they now remember. Maybe you don't know, so I will quote it. Since I quoted a little bit from Genjo Koan, in the very first, what we would call paragraph, there is no paragraphs in the way he writes it, but in the very first paragraph of Genjo Koan, after he starts speaking of myriad dharmas without self and Buddha way, he goes on, in spite of all that being the case, flowers with our attachment fall, meaning flowers wither and fall in the midst of our attachment, and weeds with our resentment spring up, all sorts of weeds, this being so. Weeds of stinky tires that are burning in the field in spontaneous combustion. And you could add on people shooting each other and beheading each other because they're the wrong whatever, sect, clan, group, and the blood seeping into the ground. Yeah. So it's not all bucolic and that we include. If we include, we include all that appears as our Dharma realm. That doesn't justify our behavior, but yet we need to include it. And that's the same with our Zazen. See, one of the wonderful things of Zazen is that it enables us to include all sorts of states of mind, being, emotion, physicality that arise. Things that we look at, how could I have spoken so ugly? How could I act it so viciously? Could they do that to me? It's so terrible. And all sorts of other that can arise in just sitting upright. All of those are encompassed in our practice, in being as is. All of those are encompassed. If they're not, then we're not, then I'm just talking about on the simple level of Zazen. In our sitting quietly in this Zendo, all states of mind that can arise are all states of body mind that can arise are acceptable. Of course, if you're dying, bang, and someone will call a doctor and will dial 911. And if you're bleeding, please get a bandage and a compress. You know, compress might stop the bleeding. But so we're not talking about foolishness, but we are talking about the fundamental, all-encompassing Dharma Dhatu. That doesn't mean we don't have always the requirement of compassionate action, of skillful and appropriate action. In the midst, I quoted this before, Suzuki Roshi made the statement, perfect as is, and you could use improvement. So the improvement is in the perfect as is.
I'm just going to ask, what is foolishness?
Suffering in vain. And yet we do it. See? There's no need to suffer. And yet, because fundamentally, characteristics aren't what they are, what we attach to. No, let me say, characteristics aren't as we attach to them. So it's foolish. But we are all fools. Sometimes we're even bigger fools. It's good to be able to laugh at our foolishness. Very important. If we can see what we did. How could I have done that? To be able to laugh at it instead of bemoaning and beating ourselves up about it. See? Laugh at our foolishness. And then be done with it. Otherwise, we bemoan it and beat ourselves up further with this. So it's not foolish in the sense of judgment added on, but simply in our blindness, in our self-centeredness, we foolishly do all sorts of things. I wanted to say something before you brought that up and gone. Okay, gone.
You said something at the beginning about our perceptions creating how we are.
Of course. Yeah. Who we say we are, who we say others are, what we say is good and what we say is bad. It's not the perception, but how we perceive, how we interpret the perception, and how we believe the language. And we do this all automatically. We do this without being aware. That's karmic habits or karmic reactive habits. But you don't have to believe me. Look for yourself. If you see it happens in your life, then right there's the opportunity for practice. If it doesn't happen in your life, wonderful. Then there's no need to make effort. The reason I talk this way is not that you need to remember any of these ancestors or any of these things. It's not important. We don't have to try to figure them out, except to the extent that they're helpful in clarifying for us what we do that results in stress, suffering, harm. If it doesn't clarify, fine. If you theoretically disagree with it, fine. Not important. I'm not going to... It's not about theories. Practice isn't about theories. It's about what we do, how we live. Because fundamentally, as I said at the beginning of Sesshin, it's being as is. Unfortunately, we often interpret as is in a narrow way. So all sorts of ancestors clarify this for us. Since I said I was going to talk about it, I will just bring it up a little right now. Approximately a century after Dogen, there was in Japan another temple, Tokeiji. Yeah, Tokeiji. It's a group of nuns, a tradition of nuns in Zen tradition. And I'll just quote the first, where part of their practice had to do with what was called mirror practice. And I'm not going to talk about that now, except to just quote the poem of the founder of that tradition. Her name was Shido, and in a way, what she says is apropos of what we've been talking about. If the mind does not rest on anything, there is no clouding. And even talk of polishing is but a fancy. So, since I said I was going to talk about them, I bring it up and I will talk about that and more in that tradition tomorrow. But it sort of goes with what was just brought up. Okay, Sandra, you had a hand up.
Yeah, looking at that, I haven't thought clearly, is there a distinction between being self-centered and being selfish? It seems like to me...
They're the same. In a sense...
Maybe it's different in that, it's hard for me, I can understand, being selfish is being concerned about the self and disregarding others. To me, it's selfish. Be self-centered is more about, in my mind, seeing things from one's own center. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I don't understand how one can see anything other than from one's own eye, mind, ears, nose, body, mind.
Notice what you're saying. One's own eye, ear. Mm-hmm. See, as soon as you add that on, my eye, you've got this story of the my somewhere back here.
Yeah.
You've got the story of my back here.
I've got my brain.
That's right. That's
right.
Exactly. That's self-centeredness. That's the function of selfishness.
But I mean, that's how we are.
No, no. That's the story of how we are. That's exactly what practice is all about. That's exactly what the Buddha's teaching is about. That if we hold on to the five skandhas in that sense, then suffering and stress are guaranteed. Dukkha is a product of clinging in the sense of ego, in the sense of self, if I use that kind of term. It's guaranteed. It can't be otherwise. That's the point that we made yesterday, that Wang Po was talking about, that Lin Ji was talking about. See, my I, if we go into that from that direction, then we are guaranteed to be creating trouble. See, the mind dharma, to quote Lin Ji, is without form and pervades the 10 directions. It doesn't mean it pervades just my body. In the eye, it's called seeing. In the ear, it's called hearing. But it's fundamentally, if you think there's this, there's a word, I'm going to mispronounce it. It's human nucleus. I can't pronounce the word. It's as if there's this little man, little person, inside of us that perceives and thinks everything. I'm thinking, I'm seeing, I'm all of that is an assumption that we're making.
But I'm not thinking your thoughts, I'm thinking my thoughts.
That's exactly the point. That's exactly it.
You're, well, I don't know how that's physically possible. I think that's like,
no, of course you're not thinking my thoughts. But to add my onto the thoughts, to add my onto the seeing, is what fund. If you hold on to that as a characteristic that you attach to, that is going to create suffering. That's the fundamental basis. If we say, that's why we start the four practice principles of caught and self-centered dream. That's what Buddha practice is about. That's being as is, not just being so-called inside this body. Otherwise, we're just a bag of skin and bones that's, you know, born and dies. That's why when we talk of the unborn Buddha mind or the deathless. Or, as Dogen says, life is life of the Buddha, death is life of the Buddha. But from the point of view of what you're saying, death is the end of my.
Of my mind.
No, of my. Of M-Y. This is what but you don't have to agree with me. Simply sit, practice, and see what's there. You don't have to agree with anything I say. I'm not asking for any theoretical agreement. Simply practice and see who and what you are, what your life is. And see how the theories and concepts that you hold on to limit your functioning, or how they create and perpetuate stress and suffering. That's the point. If I go to that point, the whole of our practice is about, well, I shouldn't say the whole. One of the things we discover in our practice is the nature of what creates suffering and what allow suffering to end in our life and in the life of others. And we could see it in a concentrated form in our zazen. In our sitting zazen, in our walking zazen, in our eating zazen. And if you can see it, good. And if you don't, then we maybe can talk about how to practice in a way that might be more skillful and appropriate. But it's up to each of us. And yet, each of us does it with the rest of the universe assisting and supporting us. See, the rest of the walls and trees and earth, all engaging in Buddha teaching that they, not just Buddha teaching, Buddha realm, that they radiate in all directions as light and support for us. Okay. Oh, one more. Last one. No, it's okay.
Is Gopi speaking about acceptance? Or let me put it a different way. If we see ourselves separate from everything, think of it as walking into the wrong family's home at night. It's going to be awkward. But if you walk into your own family where you're accepted, there's a feeling of belonging, not a judgment, not awkwardness. So when Dogen talks about the trees, the tiles, as not being separated, is it an acceptance of things as they are?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. Certainly, seeing things as they are, being things as they are, being intimate and appreciating things as is definitely one way to express the teaching. Appreciating this life in the form that it arises right now in the midst of ongoing change. Appreciating means being intimate, being at one with, and at the same time being able to manifest what's called for to function, to manifest, if we say it, wisdom and compassion, if we say it, skillful and appropriate, to respond according to circumstances, because we're able to appreciate this without being blinded by what we know about it or our story about it. Is that good? Thank you. I've talked too much today. Excuse me.
Copyright Elihu Genmyo Smith.